Okay. Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the London School of Economics. My name's Neil Lee. I'm director of the Geography with Economics degree. I'm also quite pleased to be here today because I was in the same shoes as you about sort of 10, 12 years ago. And it was a sort of important day in my life. I met Andres Rodriguez-Pose, who's one of the professors in the department, sort of big name in sort of economic geography. And he sort of taught me a lot of education. I've done very well under him over the sort of subsequent years. And also on my visit day, I met my friend Dave. My friend Dave is from Lewisham, Catford, and he sort of showed me an entirely different side of London. So I'd urge you all today to be careful who you talk to. But have a nice time, talk to people, because, you know, you never know, you might end up studying with them and then eventually being sort of close friends with them later on. So I'm going to talk about two things today. So I'm going to talk about, first of all, I'm going to give you a little bit of a picture of the department. So we're a diverse department. We do, you know, like most geography departments, we do research on different parts of the world. And we do research on different subjects. So I'm going to give you really only a sort of flavour of the sort of research we do. Then having done that, I'm going to give you a sort of sample lecture. So I'm going to talk you a little bit about, you know, a particular subject area which we've done some research in the past on. I'm going to talk about the geography of the recession. So what happened when the recession hit the UK? What was the sort of geographical impact on that? Can I just, before I start, can I get a sort of feeling for who's here to do what degrees? So who's here to do the straight geography degree? So a lot of you. Who's doing the geography with economics? Who's doing environmental policy and economics? And who's doing the other one, which I've forgotten? Development, of course, yeah. Which is one of the most popular ones. So as you can see, we're starting off with something of a diverse crowd. So first of all, I want to say a little bit about what we do in LSE Geography, the sort of research we do, and the sort of stuff which you'd be learning if you came here. So we're divided into three clusters. So the first cluster is cities and development. So they do research on, across the world, a number of different cities looking at a number of different topics. This is simply a picture of Dhaka. We have people here who work on cities in Latin America, so my colleague Sylvia Chan, she specialises in the informal economy in Latin America. We have people who do work on, for example, street children in Mexico. We have people who do research on patterns of urbanisation in China. My colleague, Hyunbin Shin, he's an expert in the Beijing Olympics and what it meant for different disadvantaged groups in China. So we have this extremely strong cluster on cities and development. And, if you're interested in this, have a look on our website. Have a look at the sort of academics who are here and the sort of research which they do. So cities and development. And my colleagues, they do research across the world and also for a number of international organisations. And one of the things I'm going to be doing here today is trying to I'm going to show you how much impact we have in the real world. And one of the things you can really clearly see, my colleagues in this cluster, they do work for everyone from DFID to the World Bank. So they're very, very important, not just academics, but also outside of academia. So you have the second cluster, for those of you who are doing environmental policy and economics. This is on the environment. So they do work on environmental policy, environmental economics. So this is colleagues such as Giles Atkinson. And he does work on environmental policy, environmental appraisal. Susanna Morato, who's she's the deputy head of department. She does a lot of work looking at, for example, forestry. And my colleagues like Eric Neumeyer. And Eric Neumeyer was the head of department until recently. He does research on everything from how you can measure sustainability over time to looking at questions, as I'll show you about a little bit, looking at questions of natural disasters. What governs the impact of natural disasters? And we're one of the world leading centres on this. And one of the things one of the ways you can tell that is because we have some of the best research centres. So the Grantham Institute for Climate Change. Many of my colleagues are sort of very heavily involved in the Grantham Institute. It's one of the sort of leading centres of research in this area. Then the third cluster is economic geography. And this is my cluster, so I'm not biased, but it's pretty good as well. I have colleagues like Vernon Henderson. Vernon Henderson's just moved here from Brown University in the United States. He's one of the experts he's one of the world-leading experts in urbanisation in the South. We have people like Professor Simona Moreno, who's head of department. And she's a fantastic expert in multinational firms, in innovation processes. And one of the reasons you can tell that this is a really good cluster is we have a number of research centres which have essentially been given to us by the government. So we run the What Works Centre for Local Economic Growth. So we are in the department working with a think tank and a consultancy. We're leading the way on essentially helping people understand the causes of local economic growth and what the factors are. Now, my research, I look at poverty. So look at the, you know, what exactly the links are between economic growth in cities and poverty, and how that can be sort of shaped by government. And my other colleagues do research in Spatial Economics Research Centre. And they, so they do research looking at the impact of, for example, you know, does it matter who you are or where you live? You know, what does that mean for your life chances? So I have other colleagues looking at Tech City, for example. Tech City in the east of London. It's like this sort of cluster of startups. So as you can see, in the department we do an enormous amount of research. This is very much a sort of taster. We do it across the world, and we do it with a number of different sort of methodologies, and looking at a number of different subjects. And one of the key things which unites us, and I think sort of makes the LSE a sort of, you know, probably the best department for this in the world, maybe, is that we have real impact. We sort of have significant impact across the serious newspapers. So this is the FT, this is Henry Overman. You know, he writes a blog post and it gets picked up in the FT. This is an enormous example of impact. My research on creativity got picked up in this US hipster magazine called The Atlantic Cities. Guys, I was pleased with it. It's not the FT, but it's pretty good. Ian Gordon commented on in The Economist on the City of London. Simon Cooper's picked up Eric Neumeier's work on floods and hurricanes and how they do more damage now than they ever used to. Now, if you haven't seen any of this, don't worry, because I'm pretty sure you'll have seen some of our other pieces of impactful research. And this is from the Daily Mail Online, and this is my colleague Steve Gibbons, who did a piece on wind farms. So, you know, we have this wide array of sort of research. We get into the serious press, and we get into the sort of the Daily Mail Online. And we're essentially, so we're starting from this perspective of doing, you know, highly impactful research. This is academia. We're analytically sort of incredibly, well, you know, we're a world-leading academic institution, but we also have some impact in the real world. And because of that, what you would be learning here is particularly valuable. So this is what we offer in the department. We're sort of leading-edge academic research. This is some of the world-leading stuff. You can see that by the number of research publications we have, by the sort of calibre of my colleagues. We also have significant impact in policy and the media. But the most important thing for any of you is that we have some incredible undergraduate employability rates, stemming in part from numbers 1 and 2. It's relatively common for one of our sort of students to graduate and immediately land a job where they earn rather a lot more money than anyone who's taught them here. This is good for us, you know, it's a bit annoying, but it's good. So we basically, you know, we're very good at preparing people for the world of work. The skills you learn in an undergraduate geography degree around analytical skills, critical thinking, particularly in a department like this where a lot of our research has a real-world focus, those will be incredibly useful. I shouldn't sort of say this, but one of my favourite students I've had here, when I was supervising her third-year dissertation, I had to make, she got a job, and I had to make appointments with her PA to see her about her dissertation. I'm not saying this is standard and this is going to happen to everyone, but I think it tells you something of the sort of the calibre of people which we take at the LSE. So, any questions on that? No? So I'm going to talk about it. Now I'm going to give you a bit of a taster lecture. It's probably going to take about sort of half an hour. I'm going to be telling you about the geography of the recession in the UK. So who here is from the UK? So most of you. And hands up if you're from the north of England. Where are you from?
Newcastle.
Okay.
Huddersfield.
Okay. These are nice places, but you might not like elements of this presentation. Anyone else from the north of England?
Manchester.
Manchester. Manchester does okay. Yeah, that's good. Anyone else? Is anyone from Scotland? Wales? Yeah, you're not going to like this either. So basically, we have quite a sort of diverse student body. A lot of people are, you know, I always like to check who's from where before I start this presentation, because basically, you know, what we're looking at here is which parts of the country will experience the bad recession and which parts of the country did relatively well. So I'm going to talk about four things, or three things really. First of all, I'm going to give you a background on the credit crunch, the economic crisis of 2007-2008 and its aftermath. I'm then going to teach you some geography. I'm going to talk about the long-term economic change and what this has meant for the UK, particularly this concept of the north-south divide. Then I'm going to talk about the geography of the recession. And finally, I'm going to sort of conclude with what we think the geography of recovery might be. So the credit crunch. So most of you, I appreciate, were sort of relatively young when this hit. But there was essentially a long boom in the UK economy leading up to 2007. So we had this period where house prices were rising extremely, relatively quickly. People were You know, because people thought that the long boom of the economy was going to go on forever, thought we'd abolished cyclical changes in the economy, the Chancellor of the Exchequer had famously announced that there would be an end to boom and bust. So people thought that there was this sort of long boom driven by rising house prices, driven by the financial sector, which would go on forever. So this is familiar, right? Sort of, you know, for those of you who are paying attention to the news at the moment. And because of this, people began to get complacent about what's going on. There was a reduced caution to risk. So people didn't worry about risk as much. Because if the economy was going to keep on growing, it didn't matter quite so much. Now, at the same time, there were some financial innovations were taking place, particularly in the United States. So we had these things called subprime loans. Does anyone know what that is? So essentially, you don't need to know that to get in here, right? Don't worry. But subprime loans. So essentially, what had been happening in the United States was that we'd seen rising property prices for quite some time. And because house prices were rising, at the same time, there had been some legislative changes, which allowed banks, or which incentivized banks in the United States, incentivized them to lend to sort of disadvantaged areas and disadvantaged groups. So what we had was this combination of banks who were incentivized to lend to disadvantaged groups, and we also had disadvantaged groups who felt like there was a long-term, buying your own house was a good bet. And this seemed, at first, like it was definitely a good bet. So lots of loans were made to people in the United States who wouldn't necessarily be able to pay them. So a typical mortgage term is about 25 years. And often people were being offered, relatively ill people were being offered 25-year mortgage terms in the United States. And at first, for the banks, this was a win-win situation. And it was a win-win situation because as house prices rose, even if some of these people couldn't pay off their mortgages, even if these people, they couldn't continue to service their mortgages, the bank would take the property, and because the house prices were rising, they'd still make a profit on the loan. So at first, everything seemed okay. But in about 2006, 2007, property prices started to fall in parts of the United States, and this stopped seeming like a one-way bet. Now, initially, this would have been a problem for the financial system. It would have been an initial sort of quite painful problem, which would have been able to sort of work it out. It would have been clear, in an ideal situation, it would have been clear who had made these bad loans, and it would be very easy for the financial system to essentially, account for it, maybe take a hit, but it wouldn't be the end of the world. But what had happened was that there had been some financial innovation. So a series of financial innovations in the nature of these investment vehicles. So subprime loans have been turned into, what were often called structured investment vehicles, lots of different forms of these, where rather than it becoming clear who was responsible for the loan was chopped up into pieces and given to different banks. And the key thing here was that it was often very tough to know which banks were responsible for which parts of the loans. Okay, so it was a very opaque financial system. Now, when house prices started to fall in the United States, this caused a problem. Because one of the things you don't notice, and most people don't know and need to know, is that the banking system is reliant on transfers between different banks. So banks don't have all the money which they're lending out at one time. They often need to borrow certain amounts of money from each other in something called the interbank lending market. Now, as part of this market, banks have to know that they can trust each other. They have to know that if they're lending out money, the other banks are able to sort of pay it back. And actually, the problem with these financial innovations was that they meant it was really unclear who owed money. It was really unclear. And so interbank lending collapsed in the UK. Well, it collapsed in the United States, then it collapsed in the UK because the banks weren't willing to lend to each other. And that was called the credit crunch. Okay, that's the boring bit over. Okay, we're going to move on to the geography bit. So this is what you can see. This is the pattern of the UK economy. Each of these bars represents GDP growth in that quarter of the year. Okay? And basically, you don't need to interpret this in sort of any detail, don't worry. But basically, the higher the bar, the better. And where the bar is down like this, that's bad. And where the bar is down like this, that's terrible. That's really bad. So you can see that there was a significant recession in the UK, a really nasty recession. And this had some sort of, significant knock-on effects. So what happens when there's a recession? So demand in the economy reduces, okay? So there's less money flowing around in the economy, particularly if the banks aren't lending. Lots of people, like companies, like people who are buying houses, they need that money on a day-to-day basis to fund their purchases. But if they suddenly can't get that money, then it causes all sorts of problems. So first of all, demand reduces. People don't know that they can get the money they need to sort of, carry on their day-to-day business. And this has a knock-on effect on confidence. So, you know, even if you have nothing to do with the financial markets, you're likely to want to save a bit of your money, keep it back for a while, because you know that, you know, that there's a chance the recession's going to be pretty bad, you might lose your job, you don't want to spend. So people aren't confident enough to spend, and people aren't confident enough to invest. So people aren't doing up their houses. Shopkeepers aren't sort of doing up their shop fronts. If you're running a machinery plant or a manufacturing plant in Huddersfield, then you're suddenly not going to be sort of investing the money into the, you know, which you might otherwise do. And because of that, the economy starts to sort of, you know, choke up. People lose their jobs, and there's other reductions in demand. Because once people lose their jobs, that has a sort of secondary effect on the economy. Now, for those of you who've done economics at A level, you'll know that there are these sort of automatic stabilizers which start to sort of cut it. So automatic stabilizers, we're talking about stuff like insurance, so unemployment insurance or unemployment benefits. And basically, so as people leave work, the government gives them a bit of money and they spend the money, and that sort of reduces this loss in demand. But there's no question that recession is going to be significantly harmful for the national economy. And the interesting question for me and you lot is, what was the geographical impact? Which parts of the country were worst affected and why? Now, if you want to answer this question, first of all, you have to know a little bit more sort of theory, a little bit more background, and particularly around sort of long-term economic change in the UK and the North-South Divide. It's called the North-South Divide. So Ron Martin, he describes the North-South Divide as the widening economic, social and political disparity between the North and the South of the country. This is why I'm interested in who's from the North, who's from the South. Because, do you sort of perceive this? Do you think, you know, those of you who are from the North, do you come down to the South and see it as being economically and socially different? It's a general question to no one in particular. It's always a bad idea. I mean, do you think, is it very different here to the rest of the country?
Slightly,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everyone talks posh.
Everyone talks posh, that's brilliant. Any reflections of a guy from Manchester?
Yeah, it's like a bit different.
It's a bit different?
Yeah.
Why is it?
Yeah,
it's more expensive. Yeah. You knew it was coming to you, right?
Yeah, it's a lot more fast-paced, so things are, everybody's in a rush to get wherever they need to be.
Yeah, people rush around. Who's from Wales? Any reflection on how this is... The South is different to Wales, which we're going to count as in the North.
More rich in general.
Yeah. It's generally there's more money sort of floating around, okay, in general, and we have to be careful about these sort of generalisations. Has anyone from the South ever been to the North?
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah? Any reflections? Broad question, no one in particular?
I think it's very different. Like, I think you notice a lot of, you can feel that there's not as much money, like there's a lot more vacant buildings, like, I think, and like when you talk to people as well, like you can tell that they've noticed it like more than we did, if you know what I mean? Like in London there's so much money floating around, like even though like there was a recession, I don't think you notice it as much.
Yeah. That's interesting. These are all valid points, right? And one of the great things about geography is that you can sort of, you know, often you can see, you know, you can conduct your own field research, as it were, by just going to places. So the North-South Divide is a very popular construct, you know, based around sort of, you know, issues of, you know, people running around, people being posher, you know, people having more money. All these sort of things are actually sort of, you know, they're quite valid sort of observations. North-South Divide is a massive oversimplification, though, as is pretty clear. So, you know, for a number of reasons. The first is that there's much more variation within regions than between regions. So what I mean by this is, you know, if you compare sort of someone in sort of, is anyone here from Tower Hamlets, for example, in East London, or Newham, or one of the sort of East London boroughs? No? So some of these places in East London, they're much, you know, on average, the people there, you know, earn less and are more likely to be unemployed than you would be in, for example, somewhere in the north of England. So, you know, there's these sort of significant variations. Hastings is a great example. Hastings is a relatively deprived city in the south of England. Okay. And similarly, you have places like Chester, like York, and increasingly Manchester, which are sort of doing well economically in the north of England. So that's the sort of first big caveat to this view. And the second big caveat is actually who you are is much more important than where you live. So this is Steve Gibbons of the Daily Mail. And Steve Gibbons, you know, Professor Steve Gibbons, who's one of my colleagues, and he's argued very forcefully that who you are matters much more than where you live. So who you are matters more than where you live. So basically, the majority of your income is determined by your personal characteristics, such as your age, your education, etc. And actually, the fact that you're located in London or York or Chester or Newcastle is actually relatively less important than who you are. And this is sort of, you know, a relatively striking finding. We'll talk more about this later. So you can see this. If you look at the data on UK cities. So this is, I was just checking to see if there's anyone from Scotland. As there isn't, I'm going to cut them off. This is, each of these dots represents a city in Scotland, in England and Wales. We don't have data for Northern Ireland. The red, if it's red, that means hot, I guess. And it means that the GVA, so GVA is gross value added. It's a measure of income. It's like gross domestic product. And you can see that basically the cities around London, these red dots, they're doing better than those up in sort of the north and the northwest. So you can see there's some sort of clusters. But there are some significant differences, okay? So I talked about sort of wording, writing Hastings here. Hastings has a relatively low income, whereas somewhere like Leeds or Manchester, York, these places do relatively better in the north of England. So you can see that, you know, these patterns, this north-south divide, there's a general pattern there, but there's nothing which is sort of, you know, it's a bit more complicated than that. So if we look at GDP growth before the recession, you can see that the north-south divide picture actually has some truth to it. Okay? So this is, don't worry too much about the scale. What this is these are the different regions of the UK, okay? And I've ordered them according to the difference between these two bars, which is a measure of GDP per head, okay? So this is, you know, the ones towards the right, they got richer. The ones towards the left, they got poorer. So just have a quick sort of look at this. If we look at Northern Ireland, Yorkshire and the Humber, West Midlands, these all regions experienced growth, but they didn't experience growth nearly as much as South East and London. And in fact, you can see that South East and London, they were really driving the whole growth of the UK economy over this period. So you can see that if you look at GDP growth, if you look at GDP in the cities, you can see that there's a general sort of pattern of the north-south divide. And a lot of my colleagues have invested a lot of effort into trying to explain it. And generally, you can see there's a couple of reasons behind it. One's the decline of manufacturing. Two's the rise of sort of knowledge-based sectors. So we're talking about business services, finance, creative industries. And the third factor, which is very important, and particularly important to those of you who are sort of, you know, who are from the north of England and potentially moving south, is that skills are heading south. So places which are particularly skilled are gaining more sort of graduates. So don't worry too much about this. This is a little bit messy. It's messy because I want you to be able to pick out where you're from. But this is the population with a degree in 2001. The share of the population in each of these cities who has a degree. And this is the percentage point change in the share of the population between 2001 and 2011. In sort of layman's terms, this is percentage of degree, this is how much it increases. And you can see the places which had a lot of people with degrees in 2001, those are the places which increased their share of degrees over the subsequent period. So what we're seeing in this UK is that these regional disparities, they're sort of sucking economic activity to skilled cities. These skilled cities, they're not all in the south of England. So if you look at sort of York's there, I mean Manchester would be there somewhere else, Huddersfield. They're not all in the sort of south of England. So it's a bit more of a complicated picture, but you can see that skilled workers are sort of moving to the same parts of the country. And this is reflected in the output. So moving on to the recession, geography of the recession. This is the sort of interesting stuff. So what I've shown you is that there was a credit crunch, and then there's been long-term economic change and the north-south divide. And when the recession came, people thought that the recession was going to be the reverse of the previous patterns. So people thought the recession was going to come, and it wasn't going to hit the north of England. It was going to hit the places which had been booming beforehand. So this is from the Observer, so five extremely sort of influential business journalists from 2008. And this is their prediction for what the geography of the recession would be. He said it's grim down south. The recession will be nothing like that one which gripped Britain in the early 80s. It'll hit people in different industries. It'll be finance and leisure, not manufacturing. And London, not the north, will bear the brunt. For the middle classes, the unthinkable is starting to happen. So they predicted the recession would be really sort of, it would hit the south, it would hit financial services. And they had some good reasons for thinking this, right? Because, you know, if the financial crisis kicked everything off, then you'd imagine financial services would be the sort of sector which got worse hit. And if most people who worked in financial services These were middle-class skilled professions. You'd imagine those would be the people who'd be worst affected by the crisis. Now, just for sort of political impartiality, I've got an Observer quote there. I've got a Daily Mail quote up as well. In the Daily Mail, one of Britain's top economists argued that it would be a middle-class recession, which would hit Britain's white-collar workers, the white-collar workers being the middle classes, essentially. So people really thought that this was going to happen. But what did happen? So this is a change in the unemployment rates across the UK between September 2007, which is when Northern Rock collapsed, to September 2009, so 2 years later. Now, the darker the blue is, the larger the increase in unemployment. Now, what you can see here, right, is that this isn't a southern phenomenon. The places which were worst affected, we're talking about the sort of central belt of Scotland, but not Glasgow and Edinburgh. We're talking about Newcastle, Sunderland, Middlesbrough. We're talking about this sort of urban megacity one going across from Hull to Manchester, the West Midlands, South Wales, and parts of London, but really not, you know, not much of London in the southeast at all. So already these predictions of it being a middle-class recession, these were proved to be, these were starting to look a little bit shaky. So if we take a view of what actually happens in labour markets, in urban labour markets in a recession period, you can find out why this was maybe a little bit shaky. So first thing is that the industries which close down, the companies which close, it's not the ones which are doing really well beforehand which close, because those are the ones who often manage to build up stocks, they manage to build up some financial reserves. They have enough business so that even if they decline, their business declines by 20, 30%, they can still survive. Instead, it's the marginal businesses, the marginal industries which are forced to close. So we're talking about stuff like manufacturing. So if you're just scraping along and the recession comes, you know, your company's not doing very well, you're not making much money, those are the people who are going to, you know, essentially, you know, stop working. Those are the people whose companies are going to go bust. Whereas the bankers in the City of London, you know, they had plenty of money, right? They, you know, they could cope with a little bit of a shock. And anyway, the government was sort of piling money into the City of London to keep the banking system alive. So actually, you know, the geography of recession wasn't going to be, it wasn't going to be the sort of boom industries which went down. It was going to be the marginal industries. So because of this, the recession, it exacerbated patterns of structural change. It was the places which were, you know, so it was the cities which were doing badly before, which got worse here. And because of that, most job losses were, they weren't in these sort of middle-class industries. They were in mid-pay, low-mid-pay employment. So we're talking about stuff like construction, like manufacturing. Because nobody was buying houses anymore. Nobody was doing up their houses. So construction took a hit. And in the recovery, we saw it was led by growth in professional employment. I didn't talk about this today, but one of the things we know about the sort of UK labour market over the last 20 years is there's been strong growth in professional employment, which is why it's great that you're all becoming LSE graduates, hopefully in 3 years' time. Now, if we look at the sectoral variation, which is just to persuade you, manufacturing was the worst hit, followed by construction. So this is changing the number of jobs between 2008 and 2010. See, manufacturing lost 11% of its workforce, construction 9% of its workforce, finance and insurance only 5%, arts, entertainment and recreation 3%. And so the places which got affected were those where the economy had been worse beforehand. So another way of looking at this is the claimant rate, it's a measure of unemployment. See, the same 60 cities I've been working with. See, these cities, so the cities here, like Liverpool, Birmingham, Wolverhampton, those are cities which had high unemployment rates at the start of this period. And those were the places where the change in the unemployment rate, that's on the Y graph, that's where it was highest. So if we look at Hartlepool. Hartlepool, it started off with an unemployment rate of around 4%, and it saw a massive increase of about sort of 2.6%. So at the end of this period, the unemployment rate there would be about 6.5%. Where somewhere like, I mean, Oxford, I'm from Oxford, Oxford started off with about 1%, saw an increase of about 1%. So much smaller increase from a much smaller start. So because of that, the recession exacerbated things in these cities. And the key determinant, the thing which you can tell, really influenced the severity of the recession, was how skilled the population was. So we don't have data on degree levels, but we've got data on NVQ level 4. So this includes nurses. It's like basically nurses, sort of some vocational qualification. But it also, it's the majority of it's people with degrees. And see, if somewhere like Cambridge, where the population, you know, around almost half of the population of working age has a degree, then you can see that the increase in the unemployment rate was much lower than it was in somewhere like Hartlepool, or sort of Walsall and Cannock, these places where actually fewer of the population had a degree. I'm not saying, by the way, that Mansfield and Walsall and Cannock, nobody has a degree. It's a sort of sampling variability thing. You'll do that in your second year. So what happened? So this wasn't a middle-class recession. Cities with the weakest economies were worst hit. It wasn't London, it wasn't Oxford, it wasn't Guildford. It was Barnsley, Birmingham, Stoke, Newcastle. And the main reason for that was skills. Skills are the key determinant of the impact. It was skilled people who really managed to sort of, you know, get away with it to a certain degree. The middle class has created this recession, and the middle class has also managed to somehow worm out of it. So overall, it definitely wasn't a middle class recession. So just going back to this quote from the Observer, you can see almost the exact opposite happened. The recession was nothing, was exactly like the one which gripped Britain in the early 80s. It hit people in, you know, it hit people in manufacturing and less so in finance and leisure. London was barely touched by the recession, and the north bore the brunt. And for the middle classes, they managed to escape with, you know, I don't want to diminish the pain which a lot of, you know, which was experienced by a lot of people in the recession, like, you know, in of whatever sort of social group. But the worst of the recession was really felt by people who were doing sort of manual, low-paid jobs. It wasn't felt by the sort of people who are graduates. So now we've sort of gone through that. The next important question is, what happens next? What's the geography of the recovery going to be? So remember I showed you this graph about GDP growth before the recession. And the places which did had the highest growth, southeastern London, lowest growth, Northern Ireland, Yorkshire, and Humber and West Midlands. Now I'm just going to add another bar to that, because this is from 97 to 2007. I'm going to add another bar. I'm going to add a bar from 2007 to 2012. And I've now ordered them by this new bar. So the regions which did worse in the last 5 years, or in the 5 years to 2012, Northern Ireland, Yorkshire and the Humber, and the West Midlands. Exactly the same regions which had done bad in the period beforehand. And the places which did well, the southeast and London. So we had an enormous economic shock, one of the largest economic shocks, you know, we've had since the Great Depression. And essentially this barely dented patterns of regional disparities. Because the places which were doing well beforehand managed to, you know, carry on doing well, and the places which were doing badly, those were the places which bore the brunt. So the South is essentially extending its lead. Now there's an interesting policy context here, because the UK government is rhetorically committed to rebalancing the economy. So you may have seen an article, you know, you may have seen some articles yesterday, Ed Miliband yesterday, he made an announcement about unleashing the cities of the north of England. They're giving them the powers they needed to really grow. And the coalition government's also very, very involved in this agenda. They've, you know, put in a regional growth fund to try and pump money into companies who are creating jobs outside of London and the South East. They've created new local enterprise partnerships, these sort of, you know, quasi local government bodies which are determined to, appointed to, like, rebalance the economy. And we're not going to know for a while whether these efforts have succeeded, but it looks like it's going to be certainly a difficult challenge. And we'll know whether their efforts have succeeded in about 3 years' time, which coincidentally is the same amount of time it takes to do a degree at the LSE. So if any of you are interested in finding out how this finishes, well, I hope to have a chat with you then. So feel free to get in touch if you've got any sort of questions about this sort of stuff. I should stress that this has only been a really tiny share of what we do in the department, okay? You know, they put me up here mainly because I was in your shoes in living memory. Okay? This isn't everything we do. We also do everything from sort of urbanisation in the south to the Bay Impact to the Beijing Olympics. You know, for those of you who are doing some environmental policy, obviously we can't put up a lecture for everything, but there's some sort of fantastic stuff going on. And one thing, in fact, I'd recommend you do is have a look at the LSE public lecture series. So if you want to know the sort of intellectual calibre of the people here, have a look on our website, have a look at the public lectures which take place, and you can think about coming to one, or you can have a look at some of the lectures which have been given by people in the department over the last 5 years or so. I'd recommend in particular, you know, if you're doing some of the environmental stuff, we've had some great people speak on that. Vernon Henderson, he's done some, you know, he's talked about urbanisation in China, I think, urbanisation in Africa. Michael Storper, another of my colleagues, has done a recent public lecture looking at growth of cities in the United States. So we do a huge number of different things in this department. It's not just this. So I'd encourage you to get out there and have a chat with some of my staff or some of my colleagues upstairs